Welcome to the Morning Philip series, co-sponsored with the Bush Foundation and the NUMAD Group, hosted at the Garage. The purpose of the Morning Philip series is to discuss philanthropy, civil society, and community. It's an opportunity to have a conversation with good people, doing good things, creatively and collaboratively. The format's a conversation, not a presentation, a dialogue, not a pitch, two chairs, a table, and a community of interested people. And today we're pleased to have with us a South Dakotan, a forward thinker, a community leader, and a practitioner. The NUMAD Group would like to extend a special thanks to Wes for sound, South Dakota Public Broadcasting for recording, Scott with Sumner Law for brewing coffee, Barefoot Dance Studio for some of the chairs, Wes Kelly for setup, and the members of the Garage co-working space for allowing us to use your office, the Bush Foundation, and everyone here. For further information about what goes on at the Garage, please follow us on Facebook, check us out at garagerapidcity.com, live tweet today at #MorningPhilip. And now with all that, please join me in welcoming Janet Kittlemans. Thank you for driving in and spending the day yesterday, and sure. Dinner last night was really, it was great to hear different perspectives and to hear all the questions they had of what you do and yourself. So we'll continue that this morning.
Absolutely.
And thanks for spending this morning with us.
Sure.
Would you start us off by describing the Helpline Center?
Absolutely. Helpline Center, we're a nonprofit organization. We have three core service areas. We answer the 211 phone number, which is 24 hours information and referral. We have our Volunteer Connections program, which connects people who want to give back with agencies that need volunteers. And then we have our Suicide and Crisis Support Program, which we have a suicide crisis line, suicide prevention training, and grief support for those who have lost loved ones to suicide.
When you talk about connecting volunteers to volunteer aid or to organizations, what type of numbers are we talking about? What in South Dakota or in the Black Hills region?
Right. Oh, well, there's hundreds of volunteer opportunities in the Black Hills and hundreds more across the state. So, you know, every day, Audrey works diligently to connect people with volunteer opportunities out here. You know, and that happens organically. Sometimes people visit with her just in the street. Sometimes they call 211 and we connect them directly to Audrey. Sometimes they're on our website looking for volunteer opportunities. So it happens lots of different ways.
What I read on your website,
yes,
is there are something like 44,000 mm-hmm. connections, contacts, yeah, just here in the Black Hills. And that's not only the volunteer connecting, but then the suicide prevention hotline.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different than 211.
Correct.
But you can call 211,
yeah,
for any reason.
Right. It's a little confusing, so let me just explain that. The Helpline Center, we're a certified suicide crisis center, the only one in the state of South Dakota. So we are a partner with the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is a national crisis line. So when you dial that 1-800 number anywhere from South Dakota, it's going to come to our call center. And so we talk to people from all over South Dakota that are in crisis themselves or worried about a family or a friend or perhaps have had a loss to suicide. So that's available to anyone everywhere across the country. Just in South Dakota, it comes to us. 211, we're available just in 16 counties across South Dakota. 211 is an information referral, meaning that you can call us for information and referral to any kind of social service program, government service program, and we do listening and support and crisis intervention through 211. So in a community like the Rapid City, as an example, you have access to both 211 and the 1-800 number. Dialing three digits is far easier than dialing 10 digits. So that's what ends up happening is people just dial the three-digit number for all of those reasons, which is perfectly fine with us because it all comes into the same place, the same staff answer it, so it doesn't make any difference to us what number you call.
In the Black Hills, what is the most frequent call for?
Sure. You know, the most common calls we get are all revolving around basic needs. Folks who need assistance with, you know, food, with shelter, with financial assistance, those kinds of things are probably the most common types of needs. Other than that, I would say anything related to mental health. is a big area of conversation. And that could be somebody who needs a referral to a support group, perhaps they're looking for a therapist, or sometimes they just need to talk. They need to find out more about, I'm having an issue in my family. How do I help my son? How do I help my daughter? I need to find some sort of treatment option. I'm having a substance abuse issue. All of those issues kind of come together.
Will you take us back to how did the Helpline Center, how was it created?
Sure, yeah. We started back in 1974, which seems like a long time ago. So we started in the Sioux Falls community, and there was kind of just a grassroots effort, and that was really across the country. It was really happening across the country, of people that said, hey, we have all these wonderful resources in our community, but nobody knows about them, and nobody knows how to get a hold of them. So let's create one phone number where people can call and get connected to all the different resources. So that was going on. And then at the same time that conversation was happening in the community, in our state, the wounded knee trials were taking place. And they moved the trials to Minnehaha County. And so at that moment in time, we didn't have any social media. There wasn't any way of instantly communicating with folks. There was conversations that would happen at the trials. And it was kind of a different time and place. And sometimes those conversations would create rumors that started in the community. And so they wanted to create a rumor control hotline to help have the truth come out about what was happening in the trials. So there was a group starting this helpline. So they said, hey, can you be the rumor control hotline? So we actually started as a rumor control hotline and then became the helpline.
Could you do that still today?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
I'm just kidding.
So what happened is we needed space, and Augustana College, which is now Augustana University, generously gave space to the helpline to start. And at the same time the helpline was starting, across the hallway, there was another group of wonderful people in the community of Sioux Falls starting a volunteer organization to connect people with volunteer opportunities. They immediately looked at each other across the hall and said, we should be one agency. We shouldn't be just, two agencies. So we were created from the beginning as the Volunteer and Information Center, always having the core services of volunteerism and information.
And you've been with the organization for nearly 20 years.
Correct, yep. So not since 1974.
No. In this time, one of the things you shared, you've shared a little bit about is that with social services, mm-hmm. So maybe we should take a step back, because I was going to go to categorizing services with the system that you talked about. But maybe before that, can we talk about what social services are?
Wow.
What's included in, what is a social service?
Sure. How I define social services is really when anybody needs help. And that can be for a variety of reasons. It could be financial assistance, like I talked about. Could be that I need food, I'm hungry. Could be I need shelter. Or it could be I need somebody to talk to. We all have periods in our life where something happens to us and we need help. We don't know when that's going to happen to us, but it will. It happens to all of us. It could be a loss in our life. It could be a grief experience. And sometimes you just need that support. And so to me, that's what the social service system is set up to do, is to really help support people when they fall down and bring them back up again. And when they fall down, that could be for a variety of reasons.
And with that definition and the national accepted way of looking at social services, to categorize social services,
yep. mm-hmm.
The Helpline Center, if I understand this correctly, has identified thousands of programs and agencies in South Dakota
yep.
that offer and provide services to residents in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
I think you shared that there are like 9,000 different ways of identifying.
Yep, taxonomy terms.
Taxonomy terms.
Yep.
And in South Dakota, how have you categorized using the taxonomy?
Sure. Let me just interpret that for everybody else. The 211s across the country we classify all of the programs and services in our database because they're so diverse, and we need a way to make sure we understand what all those services are. So there was this fabulous system created. It's called a taxonomy system. It's like a Dewey Decimal system for social service programs. So if you think of a library, how it's so precise, that's exactly how it is on the back end of our database. And so there's 9,000 terms to classify social service programs. It's incredible. That's just the diversity of how many types of social service programs there are. Now, at the Helpline Center, we're not using all 9,000 terms. We use probably close to 2,000 terms. But in our database, we have about 4,000 programs and agencies that, you know, are provide some type of service in South Dakota.
So could you tell me today, of the 4,000, mm-hmm. in Western South Dakota, how many, not right now, but you could pull this information.
I could pull that, yes.
And then eligibility for social services, you made the statement that just, in people's lives, mm-hmm. at some point in time, right. people reach out or need additional yeah. services. And that's the as broad a brushstroke as you, mm-hmm. you paint with when you think about social services.
Right, because I think, you know, sometimes it's not the lack of financial resources that drives the need for assistance. Sometimes it's the need for connection in a person's life. And so certainly they can connect with the Helpline Center and just talk with us over the phone, and sometimes that's what people need. But sometimes they just need that broader connection to another service or agency that can provide that social support.
So I want to switch gears to talk about something that I think is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And I think based on what you just shared about social services and then the information that you have by categorizing mm-hmm. all this, you can deploy that information and use it in ways that can connect and or can support our community. And a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago, Andy Patterson and I were in a conversation, and he is so excited about this project that you've embarked on called the Sioux Empire Network of Care. Mm-hmm. And what I find really interesting is how the history of this, sure. Would you take us through this process of how the Sioux Empire Network of Care came to be?
Right.
And maybe give a little brief overview of what it is as a platform?
Sure, absolutely. So the Sioux Empire Network of Care, the idea was born, 15 years ago. The Helpline Center is kind of in a unique position because the Helpline Center has relationships with all of the nonprofit agencies and the people who need help, because we work with both. So we kind of have we see like when people are not communicating with each other. And so I was sitting around a table with other social service agencies and I said, gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could all talk to each other and find out when I've referred a person to that agency, if they got the help that they needed, or if they didn't, maybe they need to be referred to a different agency. So like we all like had our chapter in the person's life that we were helping them, but the chapters weren't connected into a book to make sure that you could understand the full story of what was happening with that person. So people around the table listened and thought it was an interesting idea, but they're, no, we just can't do that. That's too scary. We don't know how we would do that. How would we share information? What about confidentiality? And I don't know if we have the technology that could do that 15 years ago. So just kind of let it lie. And then occasionally I would bring it up in conversations over the next couple of years. And then that was really through the Sioux Falls Area Community Foundation. They were doing a visioning process for the community of Sioux Falls. Like, what are different segments of the community going to look like, and what would we like it to look like? I was on the Social Services Committee, and so I brought up the idea again. And this time, it really kind of captured people's attention, and they're like, yes, we need that. We need some way to collaborate together, to communicate, and really see the big picture, the full story of how we're helping somebody who is in need. And then looking at, just from a system perspective, how our system is operating, and perhaps how we can make it even better to help people. So it became a goal in the Sioux Falls Tomorrow visioning process. And then a lot of those times, those goals just sit up on a shelf and that's it. But there was myself and three other individuals that said, we're gonna make this happen. We're gonna not put it on the shelf. We're gonna make sure we continue to talk about it. So we met for coffee every week or every other week for a year and continued the conversation. We would come, we would talk about it, we would research other communities, we would look at, is there a software platform that can allow this to happen? You know, can we really pull this off? And then we kind of reached the conclusion that I think we can do this. So then that's when we took the step to apply for a Bush Foundation Community Innovation Grant. And I convinced my board of directors that this was really a great idea and mm-hmm. that they should support me, and that the Helpline Center became the system administrator.
Why was it the time, why do you think it was the time a few years ago versus 15 years ago? What had changed in Sioux Falls? Mm-hmm.
You know, I think just overall, I think nonprofits and social service agencies were more comfortable with the concept of sharing information through technology. That had become, you know, more commonplace just in their personal life, that they were using technology to, whether that's to go shopping or to do their banking, and so that somehow that comfort level was better. And so that to share personal information to help clients now didn't seem so scary. Yeah.
You talked a little bit in the last 24 hours about the impact that that's had on and how you're engaging with nonprofits such as Feeding South Dakota, what the benefit is for the nonprofit service provider. Mm-hmm. Because you're, if I understand correctly,
yeah.
you're not only housing the database,
correct.
You're building the face for the nonprofits to enter in all the data and then
sure.
customizing some of that interface.
Right.
So that they can capture the information that they need to run their organization. Can
right.
you talk a little bit more about that? Or
yeah, let me just, how the system operates is that we have partner agencies that are part of the system. And so when a client comes into a partner agency to receive a service, that client fills out what's called a common intake form. And that's information that's kind of basic information, name, address, so on and so forth. And that is entered into the system. So if that client then shows up at partner agency B and needs a service, they don't have to fill out that information again. It's already in the system. And they can see that, oh, they already received services at the food pantry from Feeding South Dakota. And now I'm going to provide them services. And the service is now tracked in the system that they've received. But each nonprofit, on top of that basic common intake, they have a very specific kind of list of questions or assessments that they need to do with their clients to operate their programs. So what we've done is on top of the common intake, we've built customized assessments for every partner agency so that it's all within the system. So they're not operating two systems, they're not using paper and the system, it's all contained within one. And so once they have that customized for themselves, then we will run reports for them or build reports for them to run every month that will show like, hey, these are all the clients I served, these are the services I provided. If it's a dollar thing, like this is how much money we spent, you know, that kind of thing. So it's been just a tremendous service for the nonprofits. And I didn't really realize that going in, that was kind of a secondary benefit to the system, is that especially a lot of small nonprofits don't have like sophisticated software systems. They were using like an Excel spreadsheet, paper and pencil, an outdated Access database. And so this is tremendous for them to have all of this information, you know, at their fingertips so they can pull out that data.
As you've talked about this in the last 24 hours, it seems to me you're providing tech support in essence
True.
To social service organizations in our community and throughout the state.
Right now we're just the Sioux Empire Network of Care is just in the Sioux Falls area. That's where we've kind of piloted it, and it's true. I have one full-time staff person who is a coordinator, and she provides tremendous technical support because she knows the software in and out and can create a customized report or a customized form just based upon what that agency needs. And so, it's a wonderful kind of thing to see it all come together.
There seems to be also a lot of different layers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in which which makes me think of how the world's actually changing, not only in social service providing, but also how we're using technology to meet everyday needs. And I'm hoping you'll talk a little bit about how you've been able to keep the services, how you've been able to keep the people involved that are using the services and the nonprofits at the forefront of your mind. And where my mind goes with that is that, as we've seen in society over the last 20 years, a number of for-profit companies, for example, the largest transportation company in the world does not own a fleet of planes, cars, buses. It's Uber.
Oh.
The largest one of the largest hospitality companies owns no lodging. It's Airbnb. Amazon doesn't really produce anything. I mean, it does now. But Amazon connects all these.
Right.
And I think of what you describe in, it, my mind jumps to those examples of how we're all engaging, using technology, engaging to get the resources we need, whether we're paying for it or their social services, as you described. But how have you been able to keep the people, the end users, at the forefront when you're creating this?
Yeah, I think the clients, you know, when we first kind of met, and we pulled together a collaborative of a lot of different social service agencies, like 20 different people we had around the table, and we were kind of talking this through, you know, we thought we would get resistance from the clients, that clients would say, you know, I don't want to sign that release of information to share my information with all the other agencies. But when we started it, excuse me, that really we have 14,000 clients entered into the network of care right now, and it's only been a handful of folks that have provided any kind of resistance to signing the release of information, because it makes sense. It totally makes sense to them, because they're like, okay, so I don't have to tell my story over and over and over again. Right, it's all gonna be in this system. And they are like, I don't have to remember, like when I get asked, like, where have you been? Who helped you? How much did they give you? You know, all of this, because it's really hard for them to remember, not because they're trying to abuse the system, but because they have so much going on in their life. I mean, there's just a lot of stress and pressure in their life. They're trying to feed their family, they're trying to shelter their family, and it's just hard to remember all these places that they've been. And honestly, they thought we were doing it already. They thought, what do you mean you're not talking to each other? They thought that all of us were working together and that we should all know how we're helping each other. So from a client perspective, it's been logical and made sense from the beginning. You know, I think we always try to look at what their experience is like in the system, and then the experience of our partner agencies. How can we continue to improve that and make that better? And then really the third leg of the stool is kind of the data that is created to look at the system, and what is this telling us? What are we learning about our social service system from having kind of all this data? And I don't necessarily have the answer to that yet, because we're still relatively young in Sioux Falls and pulling that together. But our hope is that we're gonna have a better understanding of where the gaps in those services are, where the needs and the unmet needs are, and where people are kind of falling through the cracks to before they can get to that point where they're sustaining themselves.
What other locations around the country are doing this? You've
Sure.
talked about San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego's probably been the most progressive. They've been doing it for several years. And then there's some other communities, Philadelphia, the state of North Carolina, and I've also talked to a couple communities in Texas that are doing something similar, yeah.
What would it take to do this across the state of South Dakota?
You know, it would take, I think, some more manpower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I think we haven't kind of looked at that, because we've been so focused on wanting it to, on a small scale, be a success before we could even look at how could you build this anyplace else. And so we really kind of want to take some more time to build it within the Sioux Falls community before we can say, yeah, we got this. This is really good. But I think you could extrapolate it to serve additional communities across the state without any question. It's just a matter of like when is the appropriate time to kind of ramp that up or do that.
One last question on that. So the rollout of this, how did you roll this out 2 years ago after spending the time to?
We had a collaborative that worked together to kind of talk about the concept, and we had five agencies who volunteered, who stepped forward and said, we're willing to be a guinea pig, essentially, and be a part of one of the pilot agencies. And so we worked with those five agencies for a year and kind of tweaked and built the system and changed it, and that's not working, let's do this, to really get to a point where we felt like, yeah, now it's working, and then we could bring on other agencies in the second year.
Thank you. I, as Andy Patterson said, it's the most exciting thing he sees in the nonprofit sector in Sioux Falls. So,
sure.
If we switch gears a little bit,
yep.
Can you talk a little bit about how important are mentors and examples in one's life?
I think they're incredibly important to kind of provide that guiding force and a place to ask questions or learn. And I didn't have a specific mentor in my life, but I feel like I had a series of mentors because I completely believe in learning from others. And I had the opportunity when I was, I should maybe just tell how I got into the nonprofit industry.
Okay.
Maybe that would help kind of explain where I'm going with this. I am a therapist. I'm a licensed therapist, and that's what I was doing. I was working in a psychiatric inpatient hospital. I was out of graduate school. I'd been there 4 or 5 years and just, doing great work with clients. And then we had a hospital newsletter that was on my desk. I looked at my newsletter, and there was a little box in there that said, we need volunteers. And I was like, oh, what's that all about? And it was the agency at that time called the Volunteer and Information Center. We need people to answer our phones. And I was like, well, I can do that. I have extra time. So that started my relationship with the Helpline Center. I was a volunteer for a year answering phones for them. Found that I knew nothing about the nonprofit world, but found that I found it so exciting and loved helping people through that mechanism. So after a year, there was an opportunity to move to the agency because a person resigned from the organization. So I came into the Helpline Center, at that time, Volunteer and Information Center. And so over the course of my time there, I had the opportunity to work under a couple of different executive directors. And every executive director that I worked under, I learned something from. I always asked, and they allowed me to go to national conferences. And when you engage and talk with people from across the country, you learn so much because you get out of your own world. And so that was really kind of what, when you talk about mentoring, mm-hmm. that's where I learned the most, is having conversations with people from all over the country about, what are you guys doing with your phone line? How are you using volunteers? How are you engaging people in the community? And then you'd take those ideas and you'd come back and figure out, how can I use those ideas in my community? So I think mentoring and that desire to learn from others is so powerful.
What do you think is the most important characteristic of a leader?
I think there are different types of leaders. I'll just speak from my personal experience. What has worked for me is listening. I came into this, I was a mental health professional, and that was a skill that I already had because I needed to have that to listen to my clients. And I think that has helped me tremendously because whomever in the organization, whether it's a board member or an employee, they want to be heard. Whatever their struggle is, their idea, the conversation they want to have, and so to spend that time and listening to them so that they feel heard is incredibly valuable.
What have you seen change the most in the 20 years at the Helpline Center?
Well, technology has changed a lot. Mm-hmm. We had phones back then, but they were a little different. And now we can text and all kinds of fun stuff like that. I think the people that we help, that when they call us, the issues that they bring forward are just much more complex. There's so much more going on in their lives that they need help in multiple areas. And I don't know if that's a reflection of the complexity of our society and how society has changed over those 20 years, or that there's just more trauma that's happened in our lives and people are willing to talk about it and willing to seek help. I think that's maybe a combination of those things.
When you get those calls or texts, and maybe we talk a little bit about text messaging too and how that is a vehicle in which people are communicating. But it seems that those calls and other people in the community, being in contact with other people in the community, whether that's ministers or bankers, whatever, mm-hmm. that allows you guys to look ahead and be prepared or to help build maybe programs or support organizations to meet maybe an upcoming need.
Sure.
Thinking like the farm crisis,
yeah.
or other examples you've shared. Would you talk a little bit about how you use how the information you hear mm-hmm. informs how you support nonprofits?
Sure. A couple different ways. I think just nonprofits in general. I think because the Helpline Center kind of is seen as having a lot of the information, housing the information, that we would often get calls from nonprofits, from people who are like, I want to start a nonprofit. I don't know what to do. I need help with my whatever the issue was in their nonprofit. And somehow I would end up with those phone calls. And so I would just share, just based upon my experience, what mm-hmm. I know, this is how I lead a nonprofit. But then that helped us kind of partner when we just did our first camp capacity here in Rapid City, and we've done it a couple years in Sioux Falls. That was really the genesis of that, from my perspective, is because I got phone calls all the time at the Helpline Center from other people from nonprofits needing help just running the nonprofit. And so that we created kind of a program to help them build their capacity. But as far as informing from the community, when we hear things on the phone that are in need in the community, we certainly try to address that. So we are out in the communities that we serve across South Dakota having conversations. And the most recent one is in the past couple of months, we've had a lot of conversations about rural South Dakota and farms, and that the farm crisis is very real. Sometimes it's hard for us when we live in more metropolitan areas to kind of understand that. But farmers are struggling. They've had several years of, leveraging to try to make the ends meet. And now with prices lower than ever for like soybeans and that kind of thing, there's been many, many foreclosures across the state. And there's a fear that this is going to be a worse farm crisis than we saw in the 80s. And so from a perspective of trying to help and reach out, we have a crisis line that reaches across the state of South Dakota, and we want people to know about that. We're like, we got to get this in the hands of the people that are struggling and the people that are helping them. So we've been having conversations to partner with the South Dakota Bankers Association, with the ag lenders, with the farm service agencies across the state of South Dakota, with all of the Lutheran churches across South Dakota to get that crisis line in their hands to help people.
It seems as though the ability to be malleable and to be able to connect is just yet another really positive reality of mm-hmm. what you guys do. And to be able to be informed from so many different perspectives that allow you to make decisions then on how to meet the needs of the residents.
Sure.
Other changes, the phone calls that you receive, have you seen, you said they're more complex?
Mm-hmm.
We've all heard about the epidemic of suicide attempts in rural South Dakota,
right.
And the is that because it's more publicized? Is that because people are more willing to talk about suicide and mental health? What do you think, why do you think we see that?
You know, I could just speak from the perspective of the Helpline Center that our call volume, specifically with crisis and suicide, has been increasing this past year more than ever. And I think there's a couple of things that are going on with that. I think more people are willing to talk about it, and so they're calling us, they're reaching out for help. I think we've had a lot of tremendous partners across the state that are promoting that 1-800 number to get it out to people to access our services. You know, and I think people are just more willing to have the conversation. Like when I think about 20 years ago, I would sit next to somebody on a plane and they would ask me, well, what do you do? And I would start explaining the Helpline Center, and I would get to the part where I said suicide crisis, and they'd be like, okay, that's it. Then they would stop talking to me. They were really, that shut them down. Like, I'm too afraid to talk about suicide. But you know, when I talk about it now, I sit down to somebody, I don't know them, and I say, hey, we run a suicide crisis line. They are engaged. They're like, tell me more about that. You know, how many calls do you answer? How do you help people? You know, I had a brother, I had a friend, I had somebody who struggled with suicide, or I lost somebody to suicide. So it's like this whole change that people are just so much more willing to talk about it, which to me is progress, absolute progress. And so I think that's reflected in the phone calls that we get, that people are just more willing to call when they're worried about somebody. They're more willing to call for themselves and ask for help.
And it's not only phone calls, but using text messaging.
Sure. Yep.
Right?
Yep. We work a lot with high schools across the state to do a texting crisis program. So, like 16, 17-year-olds are much more accustomed to using their thumbs as opposed to using their vocal cords to express themselves. So, that's a great opportunity because that's meeting them where they're at. Like, where are they comfortable sharing their thoughts and emotions? And it's through that keyboard that they're more comfortable talking. Mm-hmm.
What do you think is most misunderstood in our state with the Helpline Center and the issues that you help resolve?
Sure. I think probably, we answer the 1-800 number, which is the suicide crisis line for the state, and we have the 211 phone number. We only have 211 in 16 counties because a lot of that is built on local sustainable funding is how we can bring 211 to a community. And so we've been working diligently, for a long time, and we add communities and counties every year, but we're not yet to the point where we're statewide, and a lot of people don't understand that. And so we have a lot of conversations like, how can we get the phone number to everybody in the state? How can we make it accessible to 100% of people? And so we're always looking for opportunities for funding that, whether that's state government kind of stepping in to help us do that or some other type of funding sources. So I think people don't really, when we're in the communities that have 211 and they appreciate it and get it, they think everybody else has access to it and they don't. And that's not right. I see 211 as an essential commodity that everybody should have access to because it's access to information and support. And I think on a human level, we all deserve that.
As you saw this need and the possibilities 15 years ago, mm-hmm. And creating this platform, as you've talked about listening to people who call in and listening to service providers, so that you can make these plans, whether it's for the impending farm crisis or mm-hmm. other things more immediate. When you look down the road a bit, when you look at the next 15 years, mm-hmm. what do you see? What do you see the social service need is in 15 years, and how are we meeting that?
It's hard to predict the future, but if I were to look down the road, I think we're gonna continue to see a growing use of technology to help people in need, but that has to be balanced with the human connection because you can't, to me, I think you always have to have the power of being able to talk with somebody, a human voice, but I think there's more ways that we can use technology to help people more efficiently and effectively, so I continue to see that growing and evolving over time. I think how the social service system will change. You know, it's always evolving and changing every day. You know, there's new programs that are started, and there's programs that kind of stop operating. I think what I will see in the future, that I've seen a trend, is that those programs are going to be based more on research and evidence that show that they're effective. And it's not just going to be, I have this great idea, I'm just going to do it. It's going to be, no, I need to demonstrate that this really is an effective way to help people, and that that's what so I think we're going to see more and more of that with the research behind it.
You work with, yesterday somebody was talking about the impact that the Helpline Center has, and over the years, hundreds of thousands of people.
Sure.
And you talked about some, whether it's suicide prevention or connecting people, and I really appreciate, I think it's the way in your literature, it's you connect people at critical times in their lives.
Right.
That can be really stressful.
Right.
For
yes.
the people that are doing that, yeah. I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And you're a team of 30-something?
Yep, 38 people.
What grounds that team? What grounds you in this work? Mm-hmm. And what grounds those people that make those connections, that put themselves out there to be that support to those hundreds of thousands of people?
Yeah, I think we have amazing staff. And I think I said this last night, you know, I sit in the chair of the president, but I certainly don't do the work. I mean, I'm just kind of keeping the lights on, is what I tell people. But really, the staff are doing all the work, and they're amazing staff. But it does take a toll on you personally when you're talking to people who are struggling, when they're talking about what trauma that they just experienced, because you know, you hear all those stories, and sometimes that can be hard to kind of separate yourself from those stories when you leave the office at the end of the day. And so we try to work really hard to build a sense of like community within the agency, that people can talk to each other, you know, and kind of debrief and talk about, oh, I just had this phone call. This is what they were struggling with. You know, it triggered something in me, or reminded me of this, that kind of thing, to really kind of support one another through that. But it's also can be incredibly rewarding for a staff member to have somebody on the phone who is really just at their wit's end and just struggling with life in general, and to really provide that space for them to just talk about that and have that person kind of be in a better place at the end of the phone call. I was there for them. You know, I made a difference for them. And, you know, that certainly is a intrinsic reward and kind of a motivator to kind of come back the next day.
What's the best piece of advice that you've been given?
Oh my goodness, the best piece of advice. I think one of the characteristics that I've always admired in other people is to be yourself. And what I mean by that is to be genuine and to be authentic. You know, I am who I am, and that's, I'm this person during the day, and when I leave the office, I am the same person. That I'm not somebody else when I'm, you know, at the Helpline Center running the organization.
What would be the best piece of advice you've given?
That I've given? I would say to ask for help when you need it. And that, I'm not saying just because we're the helpline, but, which I guess sounds a little corny, but I mean that in a sense that, you know, we all, whether if you're in your professional world or whatever your job is, and you're like, I am not sure how to do this, ask somebody. Uh-huh. Don't keep it to yourself, because people want to help you. People want you to succeed. Yeah.
If we can look at a couple of different facts.
Sure.
One of the things that struck me is the volunteer connecting in 2017. Mm-hmm. And at least the way I understood it is that in Sioux Falls, there are 328 agencies, and
yep.
the Black Hills, there's 179 agencies.
Yep.
In Sioux Falls, there are 46,621 connections. Mm-hmm. And in the Black Hills, even though there's like half of the agencies, there are 45,709 connections. Mm-hmm. What do you attribute that to? What do you attribute that to?
You know, I'm sure there's probably different factors that are involved, but I think, you know, sometimes there's the population size of Sioux Falls is bigger, And I think when you have a little bit smaller population size like Rapid City, it allows you to be more nimble, to be out there more, to draw in those connections. There's more partners and players in Sioux Falls, and they get lost, and there's people coming and going all the time. And I think in a community the size of Rapid City, it's a kind of a sweet spot, really, to build those connections.
There are 44,113 emails, calls, and texts that you received across the state. You've talked a little bit about the recurring themes of it. Is there something that stands out when you think of those interactions that you and your staff have that really, when you think back of 2017, stands out to you? Are there stories in there that, and maybe not 2017, you've shared some other stories in the past that are memorable?
Yeah, I think we help so many people on different levels, but I can think of, I don't have the opportunity to answer the phones very much anymore. I'm kind of, not they don't really want
You're
me in there
the
anymore.
City.
Yeah, so they're scared if Janet's answering the phone, but, in the day, I was on the phones a lot, and so I just remember, there's so many different stories I can tell, but I can tell a story about a woman who called who was just really struggling, just sobbing when I answered the phone. And just, I got to the point where she could finally talk through her sobs about what was happening in her life. And just, she had just kind of experienced everything kind of happened at once. She lost her job. She was having a health crisis. How was she going to pay the bills? She's a single mom. She's got two kids. And just, and she didn't feel like she had any support in her life. And so I just spent 20 minutes on the phone talking with her about what was happening in her life. And then at the end, we were able to kind of get her connected with some agencies and programs that could really help her get herself back on her feet. And she was just so grateful. So thankful, and just spent that last part of the phone call saying, thank you so much for listening to me. Thank you for being here. And she didn't need to do that. I mean, she had so much going on in her life, but it was just, you make that connection, and that's so powerful. Yeah.
One of the stories that I thought about and this morning, I was talking a little bit about that you had shared, that people call and you provide them the recommendation of the resource that's available around healthcare.
Sure.
And then they share that in their circumstances, whether it's because they don't have insurance, they don't have the dollars, they don't have, there's still hurdles for people, even when you connect people. Mm-hmm. And that, I sat with that since yesterday when you mentioned it. I wonder if you'd share thoughts.
Yeah, I think it happens with all kinds of healthcare issues, but I can probably talk about it. We get it more commonly on the Helpline Center regarding mental health. We get a lot of calls about mental health, and we'll talk about referring folks to see a counselor or a therapist or psychologist, something like that. And then they'll say, well, how much will that cost? And then we'll talk about that, and they'll say, well, I don't have insurance. I won't go see that counselor because I don't have insurance and I can't afford it. So, then we look at other options as far as like who has a sliding fee scale, who could you afford this much money to go? So you try to continue to problem solve and get over those obstacles. But sometimes even when you get to the end of the call, even though you're telling them that, no, I think the service will be free or virtually no cost, they're like terrified because they're like, I don't believe that. I don't know if I can trust that. And I can't have another medical bill because I can't afford it. So that fear is keeping them from getting the help that they need. Yeah, the struggle.
What have you learned in the last 20 years from this?
I think I've learned, I think I said this earlier, but we're all human. We all need help at some point in our lives. And what I really love about the Helpline Center is no judgment. You can talk about anything with us, and that is totally fine. And I think
if we had that philosophy in our communities and society overall, that no judgment, I'm just here to hear you and you're just here to hear me. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Mm-hmm. What would it cost to be across the state with the network
of care? Yeah, I'm not sure how much the cost would be for the network of care to go statewide. To bring 211 statewide, the cost would, there's probably like an additional $300,000 that would have to be found, or to fund it completely statewide would be like $800,000.
Yeah. So I want to just say thank you for taking time to be with us this morning. I shared this yesterday, and I share it today, that so my mom's been following the CNN Heroes bit, and she's done a little bit of looking up and researching about the Helpline Center and your leadership and the way that it seems that you lead. And yesterday on the phone, she's like, Matt, Janet should be a CNN hero. And
she's,
I think there is, I think what's remarkable is, and we heard this from people yesterday as well, the importance of patience,
yes,
and then perseverance and understanding a community and taking those steps to be able to create what you've created and are leading. And then the fact that hundreds of thousands of people are impacted, mm-hmm, in our state is kind of remarkable and eye-opening. It has been, at least for me. Thank you for what you're doing and the impact you're having.